speakers and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we say, we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said, with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they met it with a bat. Fucking protesting them sinners. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. This is Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind these enemy lines, known as USA Inc. Today's date is November the 19th, 2015. It is a Thursday afternoon here, broadcasting from North Carolina. I'm glad that you could join us today. Black Talk Radio Network providing you with new black media for the new millennium. And we have a provocative program, a topic that many will feel is taboo, that there should be no question about the symbolism of the U.S. flag, which represents, in my mind today, the corporation that was incorporated in 1871 that I refer to as USA Inc. And so we have a guest scheduled to join us here in about 6 minutes. We'll talk to Abdul Mateen Mays, who is currently a resident of Milwaukee, although he grew up in Mississippi, but he is a transplant to Milwaukee. And I feel for him living in that county with David Clark, Sheriff David Clark there, really anti-black sheriff. But he became an activist, talking about Mr. Mays, of course. Became an activist after the murder of Trayvon Martin back in 2012 by, of course, we all know the perpetrator of that murder, George Zimmerman. Influenced by the masses of black high school and college students using acts of civil disobedience, he got into activism. And I remember having a guest on his program. I think her name is Miss Goldstein. I can't recall her first name, but she's from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, of course, calling in from California to discuss one of the propositions that was on the ballot at the time to regulate cannabis like wine. And so she talked about, you know, the civil disobedience that occurred in Sanford, Florida, when all of those college students pretty much occupied the police department, shut down other parts of the town, did it all nonviolently. And she supported that. And she also made a comment about the restraint of the police officers and letting the young people exercise their First Amendment speech rights. So a lot of people want to forget, man, these young people been out here struggling for a long time. 2012, that was 3 years ago. And of course, you know, we have a spirit of resistance in our community. Things have been going on, even if it don't make your corporate news media. So thereafter, he began to attend Stop the Violence rallies, but he felt that marching was not a progressive enough tactic. I know he is, according to his bio, is now engaged in cop watching and street patrolling in his community up there in Milwaukee. But he has also been part of the F Your Flag movement that we have seen demonstrations across the nation, and promoted through social media. I've seen and some of the pictures and shared some of the pictures of the young lady standing on the flag, and of course, you know, this was at its height. This campaign was being promoted during the lowering of the flag, or the fight to remove the Virginia battle flag from the South Carolina State House. And so I remember that movement very well. And see, again, people think that's a taboo subject, but when you talk about symbolism and what things actually represent, you know, some people just don't seem to get why people, it's not so much as being offended. We shouldn't say we're offended, because that's tied to children. You know, the little children get offended, but we find these things to be unacceptable. We find them to be visual terrorism, verbal terrorism. And, you know, when black people have given so much to this country in all sectors, through all areas of people activity, continue to pay taxes, continue to shed blood. And so we feel like we shouldn't be disrespected, nor should we accept that disrespect. You know, that's a throwback to, you know, the ancestors of some people in this country who want to think that we should continue to perpetrate that. And that American flag, the stars and bars, as they call it, I guess, does represent a lot of blood, a lot of oppression is tied to it. If you think about American nationalism in general, you know, and of course that ties in again with symbolism, propaganda, mind control, and whatnot. And so when you think about the people, the individuals that they have lifted up above society, so-called calling them founding fathers and giving them titles of respect and honor. But then when you look at the history or the personal bio of these people, if you don't get the whitewashed version and you get the correct version, then you'll see that these are slave owners, people who enslaved other people, were rapists, were exploiting African descended people on many levels, practiced racism against free Africans and supported, you know. So these are the people that they have attached to that flag. These are the ones they spent millions and millions of dollars to carve monuments and statues into the side of mountains. And, you know, is that correct? I find that to be incorrect, to be holding up, you know, talking about role models and whatnot. I don't think I would hold up Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, who else is on Mount Rushmore? Abraham Lincoln. Forget what you heard. He did not abolish slavery. Instead, he perpetrated a cruel trick upon the minds of the masses, using that lawyer language. Who else is on Mount Rushmore? Theodore Franklin, Teddy Roosevelt, I think it's one of them. Certainly, if it's the one who I'm thinking of, the Rough Rider, Roosevelt, then of course, you know, he was practicing invading other lands, and that's why, you know, United States holds colonies to this day, like Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, Guam, Hawaii, yeah. And so, you know, this is something that has to be talked about and whatnot, and whether or not it makes sense to do these things. So that's what's on slate for tonight. We'll be talking to Mr. Mays about, but after we talk to Mr. Mays, some of the things that's in the news, Towson U president signs students' demands after 8-hour sit-in protest in his office. I also got some information from Progress, People's Organization for Progress. I know we got one of their members who's a regular listener to this program, calling from the Jersey area. And they sent out a press release via email to me saying that Princeton University students had taken over and were staging a sit-in in the president's office of that university. Then also touching on sports, where sports intersects racism. A local story that has gained national attention, an angry mom, suspected racist from Tennessee, probably a Ku Klux Klan, and attends those Ku Klux Klan pilgrimage to Memphis, Tennessee every year. Well, she wrote an angry letter using codified language of racist, and it was picked up by the Charlotte Observer, which is the oldest and largest local paper here in North Carolina. And they thought this was newsworthy to allow this woman the space in their newspaper to bash him. And that provoked a white female, white woman who is a writer for Sports Illustrated, to then write her own letter to the angry mom. And it stole the virtues of Cam Newton, and what a great role model he is. And that's in Sports Illustrated. So we'll tackle those stories after we speak with Mr. Mays, who I think we have on the line. Do we have you on the line, Mr. Mays?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you for joining us today.
How you doing, brother? Pleasure.
All right. All right. Have to say I'm a big fan of the movement, the F Your Flag movement. Also, big fan of the video that you posted about your observations that you made after you attended the anniversary of the Million Man March, also known as Justice or Else. I thought your analysis on the spending habits of black folks after going to a rally where they would just talk to about the power of black economics and boycotting, you know, non-black businesses and recirculating those black dollars. And it just really speaks to me as a person who studies media and the impact of media on people's minds, the minds of the masses. Malcolm X talked about how it controls their minds. So that, you know, you just left a rally telling you, you know, about the importance of black buying power, or spending power, and boycotting, and then, you know, right after you leave, you go and stand in line to give your money to non-black vendors and whatnot. So I was a big fan of that. I mean, that could be broken down from many psychological levels, but I thought your analysis was point on. And I'm also happy to see, I want to talk to you about, man, I don't understand how anybody, you must didn't know about David Clark, or maybe when you moved to Milwaukee, Sheriff David Clark was not the sheriff. And, you know, we look at statistical data in terms of racial profiling, in terms of what we call new slave catching. We have a program called New Abolitionist Radio, and Wisconsin and Milwaukee particularly, man, they're like battling Louisiana for number one in locking up black people and putting them back into new slavery.
Sir.
And so I don't know, and I appreciate you being out there on the front lines, participating in cop watching and street patrolling, because definitely you got some psychopaths in law enforcement up there in Milwaukee County.
Yes, sir, we do.
So let's tackle though first. Let's tackle this for first. How long have you been active? Because I know from your bio you know, kind of moved by the mass demonstrations you saw after the murder of Trayvon Martin in 2012 by George Zimmerman. You participated in Stop the Violence rallies, but felt that was not progressive enough. So is that when you got started, or what sowed the seeds for your activism today?
I mean, well, you pretty much touched on what sparked it. I've always been, I guess, so-called conscious. You know, I've always read up on law. You know, I actually grew up in Mississippi, but what's funny is a lot of people don't know that the North is a lot more racist than the South, at least a lot more openly racist, as far as like your politicians, your police, the job force and all that. It's a lot more blatantly racist than you would think it is. So, you know, experiencing that kind of stuff as a youth, teenager, growing up into an adult and going through those systems of, you know, I've been through the prison system, the jail system, you know, group homes and all that kind of stuff. So I've, you know, definitely lived on both sides of the coin. So, with the death of Trayvon Martin, that kind of sparked me to get at least involved and off of Facebook, because even when I was Facebook preaching, as I call it, I always wanted to do more, but, you know, I didn't have that connection to a mass group of people that was doing anything. So when I saw those marches taking place, like, you know, that drew me in. But like you said, in the past year or so, probably 2 years, I've always had it in me that it didn't really get us where we should be. So in the past maybe year and a half now, I've been dedicated to being a little bit more active and a little bit more radical. I co-founded a group probably a year ago. That didn't work out, but I started my own movement, which I had a following. So I've been able to go and work and build with street organizations and grassroots organizations from Baltimore to, you know, a lot of different places. I've been able to go and travel and build with these people during these incidents.
So your own group, are you referencing the F Your Flag movement? Is that the group that you started, or what's the name of your group, and how can people link up that may be in your area?
Well, my per se group, it's not necessarily a group, which means I don't have any members.
Right.
I have a lot of partners.
Or collective.
You know, in the RBG community.
Right.
Activists and things like that. It's called hashtag We All We Got. WeAllWeGot. If you type that into Facebook, my page should come up. But F Your Flag movement is a separation of that, because the We All We Got movement is more of community based. So you know, a lot of people don't really, they really scared of the F Your Flag movement and a lot of my more militant things that I do. So I separate the two. You know what I mean? But the F Your Flag movement is something I really, really, really started after they, you know, tried to frame and get my guy. Surprised I can't remember his name right now, but he was they arrested him for walking on the flag and burning the Bible and
gun
on campus.
Yes, I remember that
Eric
case.
Shepherd.
I can't. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after that, that's when I really started my whole flag movement per se. As far as like I've always been one of those. Like I see things happening, I see all these videos, but to me, I always say that they do that stuff to the right people. I like to attack racism and all that stuff head on. So, you know, I put myself in that position. Like, you know, I have a following, I have a force behind me. Do that to me. You know what I'm saying? Try that with me. So it was more of the F Your Flag movement came out of when they did that to Eric Shepherd. And I just took it a step further and you know, it really took off in Baltimore. When I went out there for the Freddie Gray situation during the martial law. Me and a queen named Erica Walker, who's pretty big in that movement too. She laid down a flag in front of the National Guard, the sheriffs, and all these different police organizations in front of the city hall. And we kind of protected her, formed a wall around her while she did that. And you know, the only thing they could do was like turn their back to her. So that footage, I caught that footage and it got out, and from then on, it's been going ever since.
Now let's talk about that. You know, let's expand the dialogue on why it is appropriate. And let me just give this quote, because there's a Facebook person who shares news and information, and you know, he's not like really doing it professionally, but you know, he uses Facebook, so he talks about important issues. So he's been talking about the Syrian refugee crisis, the apparent Paris attacks and whatnot. And so he said, like, people that he knew or worked with or whatever, whoever he's connected to, and I suspect this is a white person, but he was saying that people were calling him Islamic extremist and just really attacking him personally for his political opinions and whatnot and expressing those. And so I shared a quote with him. He said he was no longer going to do that. He was just going to share inspirational quotes. And, you know, I just told him I respect, you know, your views, what you put out. I respect your decision. But at the same time, you know, the masses need that raw truth at times. To, you know, make them think. And so I was like, you know, that's your choice. But let me share some a source of inspiration that I have. And that's Frederick Douglass, who said that people who depreciate agitation are those who want crops without plowing up the ground. So, you know, when you think about that imagery, what he's doing is you want freedom. You know, that's what he said. Those who profess freedom are like and depreciate agitation are those who want crops without plowing up the ground. So, I mean, you are expressing, you know, an act of freedom and giving your thoughts about what that flag means to you. And let's not act like that flag isn't stained in blood and attaching human right crimes, like people were pointing out about the French flag and all the blood of Africans that they have on their flag. And so, you know, it's a conversation starter to start dialogue with those interested in, you know, the racist underpinnings of this society. So I said a lot, but I mean, what are your thoughts on the symbolism? Is that important? Should black people or anybody who is against racism engage in activities to remove racist symbols from society?
Yes. And part of that is our conditioning. And part of that is also white people's conditioning, because we also have to remember white people, to me, this is my opinion, white people aren't very smart either. And I say that because they have a very, very restricted way of thinking, and they grow up in that way of thinking, and they have, it's almost like they have no sense of self themselves. Like the whole thing about most of the time when I get, you know, resistance to what I do with the flag, it's more so of, oh, that's disrespect. You're not supposed to let the flag touch the ground. It's, these are things that have been taught to them, that this flag is this almighty symbol next to God. And you know what I'm saying? This whole idea of patriotism and, you know, being good patriots. And it's really a lie. White people have not been taught to take responsibility for their history and for their own actions. A lot of them will try and dispel that black people go through anything. They'll say, you know, they'll dismiss slavery and dismiss all these things that happened to us. But, and at the same time, it's almost like they try to dismiss it like it never happened. But if something happens to them or people who look like them, then we must remember it. We must attack full force, and we must go after the ones who did this. But as far as any other race, you know, they like pinpointing things out about everybody else and demonizing them when their own history is beyond anybody's when you come to negative, you know.
Yeah, human rights crimes, atrocities against humanity.
Exactly.
And then it's not so much, look, allow me to just quickly interject here. It's not so much that you are embracing your ancestors' history or the founding of this nation or whatever, but you choose to embrace the most evilest figures and characters, you know, that's part of that history. You chose to put George Washington and Thomas Jefferson on the money and on, in our faces.
Yeah.
And these are enslavers, white supremacists, enslavers who committed all kind of crimes against humanity. But you also have people who were anti-racist and at the same time were what they call American patriots, like the 400 mm-hmm. black people, African descended people from North Carolina, where I live. Over 400 of them fought in the revolution. From history, from even, you know, different historical writings, the American Revolutionary Army was at least 50-50. And African mm-hmm. descendant and, you know, non-black people. But that's not portrayed in history, and you don't honor them in no kind of way. You don't include them in any kind of way, and you choose the most despicable historic figures in the founding of this nation to honor. And then you act like people ain't supposed to say that. Hey, is it correct to you know, honor sociopaths? So that's exactly. My thoughts on it, bro.
Yeah, and part of that, again, is our fault, because we still have people, like I said, I almost get just as much, if not more, resistance to my message from black people, from my own people, than I do them. And part of that is because our people do not hold, you know, them accountable for what they have done. We fail to realize that every war America has fought in, we have been right there fighting with them. And a lot of those wars, they would not have won had it not been for us. And even throughout those wars, you know, we still came home to being called niggers. We still came home to being lynched, segregated, targeted for crimes worse than any other people. We always get things to the maximum extent while everybody else gets, you know, little to nothing when it comes to, you know, retribution for things they do wrong. So we need to recognize that. And our people really feel like,
uh-oh, listeners, we lost our caller. Let me get him back in. I may have done it as I was navigating my computer screen. Apologies. Get Mr. Mays back on the line. At least I hope that wasn't me trying to connect back to him.
Please leave your message for 414514.
Okay, Mr. Mays may not have realized we have been disconnected. So let me see. Give me just a second, and we'll be right back as we try to reconnect with Mr. Mays. Mr. Mays, do we have you back?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. I don't know what happened there. I apologize. But listen, stay tight there. Hang on as we take a quick station identification break, and we'll come back, continue the conversation. Also want to let y'all know, if you have a question, comment, observation for Mr. Mays or for myself, you can give us a call at 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#, and of course it's *61, and that'll signal me to host. The studio line, that's 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030, and we will certainly take your call. We'll be back on the other side and continue our conversation with Mr. Mays.
Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. And we were just talking about the USA Inc.'s corporate flag, known as the Stars and Bars, and, you know, the symbolism that it is in representing racism and white supremacy. And a lot of people don't seem to be able to understand, you know, the historical connotations that non-white people have to these symbols. So you were just wrapping up a thought, Mr. Mays, if you can continue your thought before we got cut off.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, we need to, as people, you know, for those who are going into the service, or for those who may be active members of the service now, we seem to have this mindset that us serving somehow is gaining their respect, making us equals. You know, they develop this brotherhood sense, and then it becomes a separation of, you know, like they're totally different people. They're no longer us, and that they're now safe from the atrocities we have to go through, which is not true. So we need to recognize that when we talk about this flag and what actually it stands for, and what we should be rising up against in protest as far as the flag goes.
You know, there was an article, I just did a quick Google search, but of course, it's not coming up. It's probably being buried, but I know it's on Twitter. I had to go through it. But this guy had wrote an article, a black writer had wrote an article titled, This Flag Is Not to Die For. It was like black, you know, black U.S. service members, this flag is not to die for. And it was definitely on point in documenting some of the very things that you were just talking about, you know, about the history of veterans coming back and just being, you know, lynched, murdered, you know, taxed upon their families and whatnot. And so that was a great article. I'm going to try to get in touch with that writer and see if we could bring him on the program. Now, let's shift gears for a minute, Mr. Mays. I want to play some commentary from the video. It's commentary from you, from the video that you posted to social media. And you were expressing some dissatisfaction with the lack of black vendors at the recent Million Man March. And you observed the mentality of a lot of black people that just left that rally and was lining up to spend black dollars with non-black vendors. And you're touching upon two points there. The lack of organizing, it seems, to feed the people, and, mm-hmm. you know, reaching out to some black vendors and saying, hey, you know, we want to license you or whatever and support you and give you access to the many people, the hundreds of thousands of people that's going to come out. A lot of people, we need to feed them, lots of them, you know, even inviting the church in if you want to give away some food or whatnot to feed the people,
yeah.
and whatnot. And that didn't happen. But, you know, also the flip side, the psychological side. And just how sad it was to, you know, for these people to just that programming to kick back in so quick, that consumerism, you know, and, yep. and the lack of consciousness in terms of black economics. So before we play the video analyzing that mentality, just speak a little bit on the lack of black vendors. Were there any black vendors out there at all? I think you said it was one or two or something.
Well, there were black vendors out there. But we took a bus with the Nation of Islam from Milwaukee. And we got off the bus by, I guess it's like a soccer stadium or something. So we got off a ways from where the actual event was being held. So there were black vendors lined up selling t-shirts, flags and, you know, different trinkets and stuff like that. But from what I saw closer to the event, there were either, it was, you know, very few to none. Now, what I was specifically speaking on was the food. Mm-hmm. Soon as that march ended, we went to look for food because, you know, like everybody else, we hadn't really ate. And there was like a rule where you couldn't bring food into a certain part by the march, for security reasons, I guess. So, we went to look for food and nowhere could I look and find any black vendors selling food. The rest of the vendors at that time were packing up to get ready to leave. So, that was more so what I was speaking on.
All right, let's play the video right quick for those who haven't heard it. We have linked to it. It's posted on Facebook. And we'll just pull that up right quick and hear your thoughts right after the event.
Now, see, we just did Justice Earl's talking about boycott, right? Every truck lined up serving food. None of them black. This is what I'm talking about when people come out here for shit like this and they don't come out here for the right fucking reason. Because what did we just talk about? Now we have hundreds of fucking people right back. They just ended not 5 minutes ago. And they right back to spending their money with non-black motherfuckers. Milwaukee, we ain't finna have this. You know what I'm saying? Y'all already know what I got in place. What the plan is, let's get together and let's do this shit. You know what I mean? No. Hell no.
And so that was Mr. Mays, and I could see, you know, the genuine frustration. I didn't get that you were just trying to be anti-black and call people stupid or whatnot. I saw a sincere frustration on your face and, you know, just wondering what the battle plan is, you know, if we can't get people to follow it. And how you said, you know, mentioned that when you get back home, you know, that y'all not finna have that. So did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. Prior to Justice Earls, because I work with the Nation of Islam here, so I was trying to explain to them, because this is my issue with them per se, is the whole concept of this boycott idea being, you know, it's almost pushed as if it's their thing. You know what I'm saying? And prior to that, I've already been building. I run a black business group on Facebook. You know, we were already getting plans in place for the season holiday to divert money away from those things. And the past year or two, those boycotts have already been going on. So we've already been seeing that. So I was trying to tell them on a mass scale, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it is very hard to get the masses to buy into that because we are so programmed, to doing what we do. But part of that was the fault of Minister Farrakhan and their message to the people. The whole thing where it's not just about black people, but it's about the Spanish, you know, and the Native Americans and the poor white people. So when you push that and don't separate it as just strictly by black, then when people walk up to a vendor and that's your message, they won't have an incentive to not shop with somebody who don't look like them. You know what I'm saying? So the whole time I was there, I was frustrated just seeing I could just see already before that this was going to happen just because of that message and because of the history of our people and how short our attention span is. I think the whole recipe was bad.
I can see the logic in that I hadn't thought about before that just occurred to me. Because there are other people that, you know, have been oppressed, and they would see racist white men as the common oppressor and enemy. But at the same time, you know, I can see on the flip side of that is because of the people who are in our communities running businesses are also non-white, we might get confusing, but we know that those non-white people running businesses is mistreating us and taking our black dollars for granted as well. And so I can see where some confusion would come out. It's not that we don't acknowledge other people's oppression and other people's struggle, but in terms of our people who this was called for, you know, to come together, you know, I can see where that can be confusing to some people. And that was demonstrated with them leaving the event and then, you know, spending with non-black businesses. So,
yeah, of course.
So tell me about the cop watching. Again, I know the statistical data on how black people, particularly black men, are targeted up there. But what's frustrating to me is that there's the elephant in the room that it seems like some of the intellectuals within our community want to ignore. And that elephant in the room is the black cop, the black law enforcement officer, the black attorney general. And, you know, up there, y'all have one guy who is the epitome of self-hatred for a black man. Now, granted, one of his parents was white. I don't hear him talking a lot about his black father, but I've seen him talk about his black mother. He's married to a white woman. So, you know, we know that there are some other cultural influences on him, and he's probably gravitating towards that, and probably, you know, because he speaks that way, I imagine that's how they speak at, you know, his white side of the family reunions. And he has bought into that. He has totally bought into that. And now he is one of the most dangerous black men in America in terms of, you know, what I have termed a proxy racist tool of the system. We even launched a website to explain it, proxyracism.com. And this man takes the people at Fox News, the propagandists, the racist producers and what, they love giving him a lot of airtime so he can say, you know, call Black Lives Matter people black scum that needs to be exterminated. And it bears out that he is doing all he can to exterminate, enslave, otherwise abuse and violate the human rights of black people. And it's just not me saying it. And it's not just him, you know, expressing it. It's what the numbers say in that county.
Well, let me, first of all, when you talk about Wisconsin, right now, if I go online and I tell people I'm from Wisconsin, they will not recognize that as a place they know black people to live at, which is pretty true. Milwaukee is really the only urban city in the whole state. So you have 80% of all black people in the state of Wisconsin living right in Milwaukee. But the flip side to that is, Milwaukee is very segregated. We are all centralized, in certain areas, whether it's black people, brown people, like it really is a closed in segregated box when you talk about the community and how it's set up. Now with that being said, take somewhere like Madison, where Tony Robinson was killed. In Madison, black people make up, I want to say, 8 to 10% of the population, but we make up over 50% of the jail population. That's ridiculous. Here, we make up the same, if not worse, numbers. Actually, probably worse, because just the amount of people we have here that are black. I think we actually make up somewhere between 70 and 80% of the jail population. But part of that is a lot of people will try to make the argument, and Cheryl Clark is one of them, that black people are for some reason, the only people who commit crime, or we're more prone to commit crime. That's true, and it's not. One, you have way more white people here committing crimes. They just don't go to jail for it. They, there's a system in place where if I catch a case right now and I go before a judge, they will give me probably the max amount of time, even if it's my first offense. Like, they really throw the book at us here. But then you'll go and get a white person commit the same crime. They will give them probation, in the least amount of time they can give them. They'll give them all kind of programs, and they'll make it automatic that once they finish whatever program or probation is given them, that their record automatically gets expunged. We don't get that. So there's a system set in place for us to be criminalized to the max. And a lot of our people are in jail, as around the nation, for nonviolent crimes. So, you know, with the street patrols, I just go out there, and you'll see this stuff. Like, I've stopped them from harassing people where they'll catch you out by yourself. They'll violate your rights. They'll pat you down when you don't give them consent to. They'll search a vehicle when you don't give them consent to. Like, all kinds of stuff that people end up going to jail and possibly even to prison. And have a civil rights violation where, you know, they may have found something that may or may not have belonged to that person. You could have been driving someone else's car and they leave their gun in there, or they leave a baggie of drugs in there. And you end up going to prison because they searched your car without your consent. So those kinds of things, whether it's minor or major, like, I just watch the police as they conduct their business, which is my right to do. I film them 9 times out of 10. And usually when that happens, they try to go as much by the book as they can. And if I catch them in the act of doing something, I usually will tell them, you need to let that person go. And I would say probably 6 out of 10 times, they will let that person go because I caught them red-handed and they kind of developed.
And you know the law. And you know the law, because you mentioned earlier that you began studying law at some point, even though you're not a lawyer. You know, and I'm not a lawyer, but, you know, I can figure out, I'm not a dumb person, right? And so, like, you know, we feel like a lot of these police departments, from us studying law in the new abolitionist movement and trying to tackle 21st century slavery and human trafficking, like, for example, the Ferguson report that noted, you know, systemic violations of people's human rights and even mentioned some federal laws that had been broken, but there was no prosecution. And it was when the police was working with the courts and the courts working with the city manager. There's a conspiracy there. And so that's like organized criminal activity, and that's what RICO laws were invented for. But instead of the DOJ filing RICO charges on these people and going after them criminally, you know, I think it's going to be left up to us who have the wherewithal, who have the access to the courts, to start going after these police departments and cities where we're showing, you know, where we can see clearly there's a relationship to generate revenue off the backs of black people by putting them in jail, targeting them with tickets disproportionately, and all. This is criminal activity, so they should be sued under the RICO law, and any money you get, you distribute it to the organizations that supported that lawsuit so that they can continue their anti-racist freedom movements in their own community. That's what I feel about it, Mr. Mace.
You're definitely right, but I'm gonna tell you, there was a gentleman who was killed in Chicago, and right now around the country, when things happen, people contact me either to come out and help protest or organize, or they will come in, ask for my advice in the legal sense. There was a family of a guy in Chicago, I want to say about anywhere from 2 to 3, maybe 4 months ago, was killed out there by the police, and his family wanted to press charges and bring a lawsuit. So when the family was actually brought to me, they became very distant and, you know, they stopped talking for a while, and word got back to me that they were so scared of the repercussions of pushing forward in their lawsuit that they actually just stopped talking about it. And they, like, you know, went into hiding almost. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a really big fear of going up against the system.
I mean, they are facing terrorism. These people, I look at police as terrorists, slave catcher terrorists. Not every single individual officer. Shout out to the brother down there. I think he's in Georgia, who made the YouTube video that went viral and say, you know, how it's a lot of corruption in the police. So we're not talking about individuals like that, and it's not enough of them, just one here, one there, but we're talking about organized crime again, and they are terrorizing people. So I understand people being afraid. I understand that. And so there's no anybody out there thinking, well, they're cowards and they're the problem or whatnot. Look, everybody don't have the fortitude to stand up to terrorism, man. And they see these killer cops getting away with it in the first place. So I understand that, but it is going to take, You know, like, what was her name? Mamie, Mother Mamie. What was the young brother from Chicago that was murdered in the 50s?
Emmett Till.
Emmett Till's mother, Mamie Till. Yeah, Mamie Till. It's going to take, you know, I don't care what y'all try to threaten me with, and what I'm going to expose this. And, you know, if my son's death or my daughter's death or my family member's death is the catalyst to bring about change and the end of this terrorism, then so be it. We need those. But, you know, at the same time, I do understand why people are afraid. These are real terrorists, man, out there killing people.
Yeah. I'm actually, now that we spoke on that, a couple of days ago, my Facebook page was input into a group called the 3%ers, and I think they have chapters all over the nation. So mine was put into the Wisconsin chapter. So it's called the 3%ers. That group is a militia. It contains Army, Navy, FBI, civilians, police, all these different kind of white people who are very Second Amendment, and a lot of them are racist. So my page was put in that group. When my page was put in that group, somehow they got my information. These people started calling my phone. So I was getting death threats from, as I usually do, but the difference between now and then is usually I would get them from people nationwide, but now they're in my actual area. So I'm getting calls from these people now. And about 2 days ago, I had, two people tell me that they saw white individuals driving, you know, nondescript vehicles with out-of-town plates. And they were specifically stopping and looking at my car, and they were talking on walkie-talkies. So I literally, there's a video, I literally had to come home and car chase somebody who they claimed they were police. But I literally had to chase them in a vehicle and cut them off in traffic and threaten them, like, to tell me who they were and confront them, because, you know, it is a dangerous game. And like you said, a lot of people, do back down, and a lot of people do, you know, don't have that fight in them. But I am one of those people that I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing. And, you know, I am very for protection of my people and of myself. Whether you're a police officer or whatever the case may be, I will not be one of those people who make the headlines the normal way. You know what I'm saying? So right. I have to make that very clear. So I put that video out. And since that day, I have not seen any of those people driving around my house. I stopped getting the calls. Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot of the stuff I do is to let people know and to sow that seed that we need to stop using fear. We need to stop being afraid.
Well, I certainly agree with that message. Did you have anything in closing that you would like to leave with our listeners? I do want to tell them to follow your Facebook page. I think this is the correct one, The Many Faces of Vaughn. Is that the correct page, sir?
Yes, that's my fan page.
Okay, I'll link to that for the listeners that may be listening now or later on the podcast if you want to link up and follow the page. Remember, as I try to tell y'all, take that anytime you follow a page on Facebook, you hit the like button, hit it again, and then you choose the option, the type of notifications that you will get, or you will not get them. And I feel like that's a deliberate effort to suppress information, mm-hmm. whether it's on the consumerism side, trying to get people to spend money to get more likes or views on their page, or if it's to suppress information because people want to get information from a page, but they don't know you got to then take a second step to get notifications, and then they wonder why, hey, I don't never see anything from the faces of Vaughn, the many faces of Vaughn. So make sure y'all take that extra step. So is there anything in closing you would like to leave our listener with before we move on to our new segment?
I would just encourage everybody to get involved. We all have roles. I have accepted my role as being that voice and that protector of the people, whether it's here at home or anywhere across the nation. But we do need help. Like, there are a lot of us spread out across the nation who are doing this work. I know everybody can't commit time, but for efforts that we have going on, like for what just happened at Mizzou, I feel like, you know, there should be something in place for us to mobilize. there should be something in place for us who are committed and who do have the time to act in these situations, that we be able to count on the people who care and who would like to do something. Donate, share the information, whatever you can do. Everybody has a role, and I encourage everybody to get involved in some kind of way other than just having an opinion.
Well, Mr. Mays, I want to thank you for your contributions to counter racism and being one of those down there in the trenches. And you be safe behind these enemy lines. And hopefully we'll talk again real soon. You be safe. Peace.
Thank you. Peace, brother.
All right. That concludes our interview with Mr. Mays. Again, big fan of the work, thought-provoking. Makes you think about these issues from multifaceted, angles and whatnot. So we will take a station identification break, kick some message music. And when I come back before I wrap up the program, we'll check a couple of those stories I mentioned at the top of the hour that's in the news. Remember Towson University president signs students demands after an 8-hour sit-in protest in his office. I know one of those demands was to make racial slurs when people are being targeted with racial slurs by other students, to make that automatic expulsion among the penalties for engaging in that kind of terrorism. So that was among their list of demands, and the president agreed to it by signing it. Just from the history, they sign a lot of things and then go back on, the contract, so to speak. Mayor Bill de Blasio and Police Commissioner Bill Bratton told New York City to ignore a new ISIS video. There's a CIA ISIS video out that saying that there's going to be attacks in Times Square. And so you got the mayor and you got the police commissioner telling people to ignore this, to ignore the video. Now, this follows the Paris attacks, and I know, people are saying it's a false flag and it's fake and all of this. Look, false flag doesn't necessarily mean didn't nobody get killed. People do get killed, all right? And I know about the crisis actors that, get the interviews in the media, whereas, as a point was made on the Lotus Place, if I just lost a family member, the last thing I'm trying to do is give a interview to the mainstream media. I'm going to be in grief and whatnot. And so all of that is going on. But there are also people getting killed, actually getting killed. And so part of that story, as I reported on this program, the Associated Press was the one of the sources that said that France, the USA, and other NATO partners that are fighting in Syria, trying to overthrow Assad in Syria, overthrow their government, that they got specific warnings from the Israelis and the Iraqi intelligence services. These warnings were sent a day before the attack through the cables, diplomatic cables. That is high level communications. That is not just send an email to somebody like Hillary Clinton on her private email server. No, you send it through official channels. That means this is important, this is high level stuff, and it's going through the diplomatic cables. Remember, that's what Anonymous and them been hacking, WikiLeaks, revealing these cables. So that's the high level security involved here. And so for France and the U.S. government to just brush it off and allow those attacks to happen, it appears they did tell law enforcement, they did tell firefighters, and they were out there ready to respond to the aftermath of the attack. They weren't out there to prevent an attack. And so apparently they did tell those people. They told the first responders, so to speak, and nobody else was told. And I'm probably sure the first responders probably told their family members, look, don't go out, Friday evening. Don't go to the theater. Don't go to the movie. Don't go out dancing and whatnot, because, they called us in for, this emergency training exercise. And, I really can't say more, but just stay home tonight, honey. You and the kids stay home. I'm sure they family members warning. All right. But the rest of the public. And so, like I theorized the other day, I think this is because they were trying to stop it. But if they couldn't stop it, you know, then that's the cost of doing business. We got to keep the economy going strong. We can't pump fear into people. And we just got through talking about fear, but that's a different kind of fear. It's not so much a fear as fear, but it's taking precautions. And people should have been warned. They should have been warned and given that option of whether or not they want. But you took that choice away from them because you wanted them to go out and spend money to benefit the economy. And you didn't want to let the terrorists win, so to speak. So, you know, if we got to allow, you know, people to get killed, then that's the cost of doing business. So I'm tying that to, you know, I feel like that's irresponsible for Mayor Bill de Blasio and Police Commissioner Bill Bratton to tell New Yorkers, and we got fans and media partners in New York, activists, people I know in New York, family members in New York, and you're going to tell them, oh, just ignore this video. Just ignore it. It's nothing to see here. Don't take it serious. You know, even though it came from their Twitter account or whatever social media or website they're using. And so then I'm asking a question on a different level. Well, you know, if you're telling them to ignore it, then, you know, what do you know about the source? Do you know that this is really just a bunch of CIA people or you know, whatever assets that they have out there in the field, and they're just trying to feed the fear into people and whatnot? So you know, it's really to do about nothing because you know the source is really CIA connected. You know the program, the fear program. Or are you saying that, you know, why are you saying then, you know, these are really ISIS people or whatnot, but don't pay attention to their video threatening to murder you when you go out to Times Square and whatnot? That's just irresponsible on their part, and they are not putting security of their citizens first and foremost in their mind. They're more trying to protect the business community in that area. So anyway, and the last thing is a local story kind of picked up big news. You know, time to time I write about sports. I also listen to sports on the local talk radio. I've been playing sports all my life since playing Little League Baseball in Detroit at 8 years old, starting off with T-ball and then, you know, becoming a very good basketball player. At one time I was boxing. And so that's just part of my life. That's just part of, you know, where I got exercise. I got enjoyment out of competing. So I still follow sports to this day. But now when I talk about it, now when I write about it, it is where sports world is intersecting racism as part of the system in the people activity area of entertainment, but also intersects with economics and whatnot. And so you had this white mother in Tennessee. Again, in Tennessee, they just, you know, not too long ago, this dude who owns some stolen Cherokee land in the mountains of Tennessee, slapped on the side of the mountain a big Confederate flag. That's how they getting down in Tennessee. This is where, you know, the Memphis City Council just recently voted to remove the bones and bones of the wife of Nathan Bedford Forrest, one of the founders of the Ku Klux Klan, former U.S. senator, also the butcherer of innocent black people. And, you know, Union troops that had given up a war criminal and whatnot. And so this is the place we talking about. This is Memphis. This is Tennessee. This is Klan country. And so this woman going to write a letter to the editor of the Charlotte Observer in another state here in North Carolina to another city, talking about she had to explain to her 9-year-old daughter why Cam Newton was acting like a thug, why he was acting like this and that. She ain't used the third thug word, but she might as well, you know, she might as well use the N-word, but she probably knew it wouldn't have got published. The racist over there at Charlotte Observer, who likes to take underhanded, refined racist pot shots at this young black man. Yeah, so they published this woman's unfair critique of Cam Newton, know nothing about his character, and then using her daughter, her 9-year-old daughter, as a prop. If she had a 9-year-old daughter, this could be a man for all we know, a white male KKK member writing this letter to the Charlotte Observer. Did they do any verification that this 9-year-old child really said, does Cam Newton have a wife and children at home? Is he's not thinking about them, is he, that's watching on TV? This 9-year-old child ain't said nothing like that. But the editors over at the Charlotte Observer, thought it was appropriate to publish a hate letter towards the franchise quarterback of the city that it is in that is benefiting greatly from the buzz that this young man's talent and the team and the money that's being injected into the local economy. But, you know, as I heard them say on the Cows, you know, independent media program that comes on this station is, you know, what is it? Birds chirp and white people practice racism. That's what's going on there. But I was really, really glad to see a white woman act as a proxy tool of Cam Newton. Reverse proxy racism is what I'm going to call it. But this white female, who's also a mother, who also has children, she writes for Sports Illustrated, one of the major sports publications in the United States, right? High profile paper. So she's a writer for them. She's been working in media, and she pens a angry letter to the angry mom and saying, but I'm angry for different reasons. And she just really took up for Cam. It's not so much as she took up for Cam, but she pointed out the facts. So those are some of the things that we can discuss on the other side, because they practice racism in every people activity, and it's good to see, you know, people countering racism on every level. Because if you're a black person, when I called into the station to defend him, I didn't say this is racist or her motivation is racist or Charlotte Observer is racist. I learned from Mr. Neely Fuller. He said, when you're talking to white people, don't even use the R word, because then they just going to deflect and, oh, everything ain't about race. Oh, he playing the race card. And then, you know, then it turns into black people whining about nothing. No, I use some big words on them. I use implicit bias. And that's what I told. I say, you know, I can't explain why Cam Newton is being targeted for him doing the dab that his little brother asked him to do before giving the ball to the little fan, as he do after every touchdown. So, you know, why you would get upset about that, but not this white quarterback named Carson Palmer for the Arizona Cardinals, who told the fans to suck it while grabbing his crotch and thrusting his hips at the crowd. All the kids in the stand, all the old ladies in it, just, you know, supposed to be a family environment, right? But you worried about Cam Newton doing a dance that is popular in the hip hop community, popular among young people, and that's what you gonna write about in Charlotte Observer. You gonna publish, you gonna waste paper and ink on that hate. That just tells us who you are. But I already peeped your game years ago. All right, so you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., broadcasting every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday right here on the Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Structure has successfully created the image of the American Negro as someone with no confidence, no militancy, and they had done this by giving him images of heroes that weren't truly militant or confident. And now here come Cassius, the exact contrast of everything that was representative of the Negro image. He said he was the greatest. All of the odds were against him. He upset the odds makers. He won. He became victorious. He became the champ. They knew that as soon as if people began to identify with Cassius and the type of image he was creating, they were going to have trouble out of these Negroes, because they'd have Negroes walking around the street saying, I'm the greatest, 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 greatest.
With Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
This is a journey. confusing blur of activity, each ant doing its own thing, but it can't be. Somehow the ants coordinate their actions so that large insects are overwhelmed, killed, and carried back to the base.
Pairs is dying and my people are suffering. The money's still low, you should see how they budgeting.
Watch what comes out your mouth.
People are suffering. It's elementary, they want us all gone eventually. Pairs is dying, people are suffering. The money's still low, you should see how they budgeting. Pairs is dying, and my people are suffering. The money's still low, they want us all gone eventually.
I swear to God, living in this economy is like a robbery. The government taxing me when they owe me for my property. You niggas act like you happy to live in poverty. When I feel like a king, they gotta make these fools acknowledge me. I'm royalty and loyal to the feeling of it. The contrast make us look thuggish. We talk, walk, and look rugged. Naturally, nothing sad to see. We all a part of this tragedy. I'm mad at you, so why you mad at me?
We headed for the times of the nine. Watch out, six. Sun cycle on the rise, moon cycle out the mix. Living on this planet of the snakes and the crucifix. Pardon yourself as I unk my way through. Marching with my A boom boom, making my debut. Like great balls fire, nothing to save you in these replenishing times. I honor my dead, making my ancestors proud when it's off with your head.
Does my pencil possess potential to change mental jazz? Show what you can in this pack with essential less. What is essential to keep it the sharpest against you? Yes, what is essential to keep it like a temple? Blast, call to the temple, keeping the beat simple and fresh while they whimper and rest. I'm intuition like the simplest guess. Into tradition, I'm on a mission until I transition to give the up and coming a better existence.
I've seen a Vegas. I'm reaching for a corner too. The older we get, it switches up the point of view. And they anointed you leader of the free world. Desolate minds refined to the B-girl. The most benevolent is evident who I be. Graffiti on the wall, the crew, Drew Ali. Zoop who I keep shifting on the paradigm. Raise the vibration, then go prepare the mind.
Define magnificent red gem. Dip deep, the omnipotent. All singing, I just speak the game plan. I pray for niggas, amen. That sharpie spray can, I'm made man. With suede vans, no street skate, no beat taking. For Pete's sake, he's the beast quaking, the scene shaking. No mistaking, the ants conquer the elephants. FTPRBG, the rest of the fella.
All right, welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. That's the Wrath of the CI Fool, the ants conquer the elephants, put out by the FTP movement, Atlanta based. Kalonji Changa is one of the activists who helped bring those brothers and sisters together, those hip-hop artists, to create that, what I call message music. But we're going to end it there. We're going to go to the phone lines. Don't want to keep the caller waiting any longer before we jump into our first story about, it seems to be a strategy. I don't know if this is spontaneous or if this is a plan or something like that. And these students on different universities in communications with each other, but they have been staging sit-ins in the offices of presidents and trying to force them to meet their list of demands. So we do got a call, area code 267. Thanks for chiming in. Go ahead with your question, comment, or observation.
Hey, good afternoon, Scotty. This is Brother Ralph.
Hey, peace to you, Brother Ralph. Peace to you. What's on your mind today?
Hey, well, that story you just talked about, the college students sitting in, I believe that's why this France stuff is pumped down our throats.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to this terrestrial Black Talk Radio, and it's supposed to be Black Talk Radio, but you're the only one that has that, they're talking about the jihadists and the Sunni Muslims. Nobody wants to hear about that. We want to hear about what's going on in our country right now. And, but, you know, and I even heard a host say this morning when a woman said she called in, she's, whose money's going to pay for these refugees? And every time she bring this up to some of these Black Talk Radio hosts, they shoot her down and saying that, you know, that, they're going through the same thing we went through. And the radio host said, look, I know some of those hosts you're talking about, and they know me. And I'm not going to name names, but they all do that because that's what they're supposed to do. So, yeah, I mean, you know, those college sit-ins should be the main emphasis of Black Talk Radio, but it's not. We're talking about the Syrian refugees and the different factions that's going on in these countries. But it's supposed to be Black Talk Radio, not Syrian Talk Radio. I had to get that off my chest, guys. You know, because I was really frustrated. But you were talking about Cam Newton and sports, and I played Little League, I played football, I played basketball, I still play basketball just to stay in shape at 56. And let me tell you something, man, the same thing Cam Newton is going through is what Donovan McNabb went through. And in my opinion, Randall Cunningham, who was the best quarterback the Philadelphia Eagles ever had. I mean, he had no offensive line, no weapons, no nothing. And the guy used to run for his life and still get him to the playoffs. He had, had nothing.
So you put him above Donovan? You put him above Donovan? Donovan took them to, like, how many straight NFC championships? I think he made a football, but, you know, he didn't win the Super Bowl. But you would put Randall Cunningham above Donovan McNabb?
McNabb had weapons.
Okay, I see where you're coming
Randall
from.
Cunningham didn't have no running backs, no offensive line, no nothing. Mm-hmm. He just had a real coach that focused on defense, and he got him to the playoffs a couple of times. Okay. Randall was the best coach, had an arm, could punt, could do everything, man. Best talent ever. They just never put nothing around him, and this racist sports talk radio station here chased the man out of town. They just trashed Donovan McNabb up and down the dial. But right now, they bring in these sorry people here, and that's why the Eagles are suffering like they're suffering, man. But these people, so Charlotte is no different than Philadelphia.
Nope.
No different whatsoever.
Nope.
You know, so what Cam Newton is going through, they all racers think the same. They just see a black quarterback. They don't care if that man is 9-0. They don't care what he did. Ben Roethlisberger, rape women. But they don't talk about him. They just talk about Big Ben and what he does.
And
so, you know, man, I just had to call in and let you know, Cam Newton is not unique.
Right, right.
All these brothers are getting it. They're talking about Russell Wilson. They're talking about, like, how this woman, the girl he's going with, Sierra, I think that's her name, is messing up the team. So they're trashing these brothers all over the place. But I wish these brothers would just speak out on it. But something's going on where they don't even speak out. So if they're not man enough to speak up for themselves.
Well, you know what Cam told them, though. You know what Cam told them. And Cam, though, you know, Cam is pretty much, you just described him when you described Randall Cunningham and the lack of weapons. Come on, bro. He got an undrafted rookie and Corey Brown out there starting at one receiver. They lost their number one draft pick, Kevin Benjamin from Florida State, won a national championship. He had an ACL injury done for the season. Then they got Ted Ginn, who's known most for dropping the ball, but at the same time, you know, he will run back them punts for touchdowns and whatnot. So Cam don't have the weapons that a Tom Brady has and whatnot, and he's doing the most with the least. And so, you know, he's also selling those white quarterback record books. You know, that last touchdown that this lady is making a big deal out of his dance, he had just passed number two all time rushing touchdowns for a quarterback. He just passed Fran Tarkenton, and you know how Fran Tarkenton is held up there as, you know, mobile quarterbacks, and he's within two or three touchdowns of Steve Young. This young brother just in his fifth year. We're talking about two white quarterbacks that their entire careers, well, he's almost surpassed them in just 5 years. And so he is a special talent. He's like on a Jim Brown level, like a Barry Sanders level. And I feel like a lot of that hate is based on the fact that he's a black quarterback and he's tearing up them record books, man. And people just, they resistance to that, man.
Hey, Scott, are you old enough to remember Hank Aaron and the hate he got?
Yep, sure am.
Okay. Oh, well, nothing changes if nothing changes. This is America, brother.
But he has been speaking out, bro.
Go ahead, bro.
I'm sorry. He has been speaking out. Like, you know, he has been quietly in a codified manner showing support for the different movements. So some of his friends had went to Cancun on vacation during the off season, and then they were like, he posted a picture of them and Some of them had bandanas on their faces, and they were striking, you know, the poses and whatnot. And this is in Mexico. And all them haters start, oh, look at that gang and all this and that. And Cam dropped a Muhammad Ali quote on them, talking about, I'm not going to be who you want me to be. I'm going to be who has never been. And I was like, you go ahead, young brother. This young brother, yeah. he be playing them intellectual games with them, man. He got university degree in sociology, so he know he's handling it perfectly. And like he said, like he said the other night, I'm still, it is what it is. I'm not going to change who I am. But if this 9-year old girl is offended, I apologize. But everybody know this 9-year old girl ain't wrote this letter, so he's handling it perfectly. Yeah. And right after the assassinations at the church in Charleston, South Carolina, he showed up down there, man. He was down there with, you know, family members, but this wasn't headline news, and he didn't want it to be headline news. But one of the family members took a photo of him, you know, and posted it to social media. Then the next thing you know, Jerry Richardson, the one who owns the team, he's banning Confederate flags from the stadium. He donates all the money to pay for the funeral expenses and whatnot. So this young man behind the scenes, quietly, man, is impressing his will and showing social consciousness. And again, in the Panthers locker room, they have fully, you know, they interview the players there about the University of Missouri football team and what they did. And the NFL players for the Panthers was fully behind that and saying that more athletes need to speak up and use their star power to affect these social movements. So he seems to be, his mind seems to be in the right place while navigating the racist world of the NFL and still remaining true to who he is.
Oh, that's good, man. But I just had to call you because it's so identical to what Randall and Donovan McNabb went through here. You know what I mean? They went through the same as that. They couldn't do anything right. Yet they got these teams to the playoff with no talent.
Right.
Except Donovan had talent. He had Terrell Owens and a couple.
Yeah, he did.
So he had talent, but Randall had nothing. And they trashed that man on how to pull it up, man. Mm. So I just had to call in with my 2 cents, Scotty. I'm enjoying your conversation, bro. Real Black Talk Radio. None of this garbage that's on terrestrial radio, man. It's pathetic.
Peace to you, Brother Ralph.
Yes, sir. Take care, man.
All right, that was Brother Ralph. Make sure you check out the program that he's associated with based out of Philadelphia, Time for Awakening Radio, which airs on the Black Talk Radio Network every Sunday at 7 o'clock p.m. So some quick information. Let's play this video. Towson University president signing the students' demands after an eight-hour protest in his office. So they staged a sit-in. They took it old-school tactics on them. And What's funny is I was reading on Facebook, give me just a second, I was reading on Facebook, somebody had said that Martin Luther King Sr., not Jr., not MLK, that was assassinated by the U.S. government, but his father was like a board member, president, or something at Morehouse, and that students at Morehouse, I think Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture might have been involved, but I had read how students had did a sit-in on that black historic college, Morehouse, to force their demands to be met. And so now you have black students in 2015 using those same tactics. So this is a report that's coming to you out of, let me see where this is. This is CBS affiliated channel 13, and I'm not even sure where Towson University is, but I'll certainly look that up. All right, so this is the report from that local affiliate about the sit-in at Towson University. I'm going to have to go through this ad, so y'all bear with me. Let it play out.
Copy one. But why be a follower when you can be followed?
And no, we don't promote alcohol on this station, so let's take that down a little bit.
You're living in the
shadow. All right, here we go again. This is from a report on Towson University from
calling
the Baltimore
Sun. For change on campus, students hold a sit-in at Towson University to demand a shift in school policies to end racial injustice. The protest, part of nationwide movement. WJZ's live Megan McCorkle has more on what's being done. Megan?
Well, Denise, that sit-in started at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and tonight at this time, students are still inside the administration building demanding that the president address their concerns.
Black students matter! Black students matter!
Eggshells thrown at black students, racial slurs yelled out windows, and a lack of faculty diversity. That's what some students at Towson University say they've been facing.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom!
I greatly admire your courage. And I greatly admire the fact that you are here.
Together, the president and students work through a list of demands.
There should be equal representation in their process,
including increasing black tenure-track faculty, requiring staff to take a cultural competency course, and creating a more inclusive campus. University officials say they're happy to have the conversation.
It really shows me that students are learning and they're empowering themselves and that they're going to be ready to lead in the next generation.
The sit-in is part of a national movement called Student Blackout that's happening on campuses across the country.
We shall overcome.
For months, students at the University of Missouri protested what they call systemic racism on campus. It led to the university president's resignation and demonstrations at other colleges, including Johns Hopkins. Students there also calling for more full-time black faculty members and accountability for those who target black students. Back at Towson, student activists say they'll continue to stand up and fight racial injustice. And again, those negotiations inside the administration building are continuing at this hour. Students say they plan to be here all night long. We're live in Towson. I'm Megan McCorkle, WJZ Eyewitness News.
All right. Thank you, Megan. Students on 23 college campuses have participated in the student blackout.
So that's 23 different student campuses. So this seems to have been organized, show of solidarity, strategic maneuver to use state sit-ins to force their demands. And like Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. All right. If you don't make the demand and you just simply complain and, oh, woe is me, and you don't do nothing to address it, then I would say you don't deserve what you get, but you shouldn't expect anything less than what you're willing to accept. All right. I think Frederick Douglass also said the limits of tyrants is prescribed by those they are oppressing. You know, the endurance of the oppressed. If you want to keep taking it, then it's going to keep getting dished out to you. So shout out to these students for participating in this act or this demonstration of solidarity and power across the nation. Again, it was part of a nationwide student blackout movement using the hashtag student blackout. And again, it followed the University of Missouri students coming together, athletes and the rest of the student population coming together and forcing these issues to be addressed. And we know that resulted in the chancellor resigning and the president resigning. Now, what you didn't hear in that report is that the university president, you heard that they worked through the list of demands. Well, apparently they must have came up with agreed upon criteria and he signed it. So it should be implemented. And one of those things was, let me see if I could find it in this report that I linked to in BaltimoreSun.com. Towson University is just outside of Baltimore, so it's in that area. It's in Towson, Maryland, so it's not that far from Baltimore. So that's the location of where this particular student sit-in went on. Let me see. The document listed the demands and ended with a pledge for Chandler. I am acknowledging that in the event that I do not keep my promise and begin to address these concerns, I will resign as president of this university for failing to effectively represent black students. So, man, they got this dude with a pledge to resign if he don't address their issues. And I know one of the things Here it is. The students wrote that they had endured oppressive conditions at Towson, including eggshells and racial slurs being thrown out of windows, racial slurs being shouted at house parties, sexual and racial epithets from classroom professors, lack of representation in black faculty of the tenure track, and lack of cultural competency in our peers and professors. One of the things they asked for, I'm not seeing it. I'm not going to waste a whole lot of time. Y'all can follow this video. But, yeah, here it is. The protest focused on increasing the number of tenure faculty, adding cultural competency courses, and creating a no-tolerance policy. No tolerance, zero tolerance, like Hillary Clinton was talking about. Zero tolerance for racists, all right? So zero tolerance policy on racial, sexual, and homophobic epithets with consequences to include potential expulsion. See, there has to be some concrete penalties that will be paid if you're trying to discourage what I'm going to call criminal behavior. Again, you don't have the First Amendment right to terrorize people with your words. You don't get to run up to people and call them niggers, spicks, faggots, and all that kind of stuff. That's an act of terrorism. That's harassment. That there are laws on the books, whether it is a law against harassment, stalking, assault. If you hit me with an egg, doesn't matter if I got hurt or not, you still assaulted me with eggshells or whatever. You still, those are criminal penalties. And there should be zero tolerance for terrorism on the campus. Right now, like, you know, Brother Ralph brought up, a lot of talk about the terrorism that's occurring in France. And certainly I have provided my analysis and commentary on it through Facebook as well as this program and whatnot. But at the same time, before that even happened, I had been using terms like terrorism to describe the terrorists. The white terrorists on these campuses terrorizing, you know, black people. So we need to be addressing the terrorism that's happening right here in this country. And in fact, many people are. And I'm still very inspired because, like I was saying last night on New Abolitionist Radio, I hope by the time my oldest grandson, who's 4 years old, becomes college age, that because of the activities of these college students today, that either the battle will be won or we're on the precipice of winning the war. By the time he, you know, that's 20 something years, 20 years from now, 18, 15 years from now. So I too am inspired by to see that we are seeing leaders of the next generation being formed today that will lead. We just hope they don't turn into John Lewis's and other people who got scared after they assassinated Malcolm, after they assassinated Martin, after they assassinated JFK, and then, you know, these so-called activists then, you know, got scared. And now they become part of the system and acting as proxy racist tools with John Lewis right now, acting like a sheep herder of black voters to get these people to vote for enemy of the community and Hillary Clinton. Is just ridiculous. So we hope that they don't become those future leaders like that. So anyway, let's move on to the next story. The next story is, again, this is touching upon terrorism, but this is happening right here. And don't make no mistake, we are susceptible to terrorist attacks because we've been suffering terrorist attacks as a people for over 500 years on this continent. And it continues to this day, whether it's the Ku Klux Klan or some other racist white terrorist group, or whether it's the police department coming out of the slave catchers. They were terrorists too. And what's going on today is terrorism. It's terrorism of these students on these campuses and high school campuses as well. It's terrorism. And so it does affect us. And so, you know, I'm not going to be one to ignore what's going on the global battlefield, whether they are agents of the U.S. government through the CIA, FBI, whoever. If they're calling themselves Al-Qaeda, if they're calling themselves ISIS, they are killing people. They are killing people, and I don't want to see anybody killed here. And certainly, we again see white males committing mass terrorist, similar mass terrorist acts right here in the country. All right. And so I don't want to see none of my New York family members, none of my friends and associates in that area. Some of the listeners, several listeners, you know, are in that area. Don't y'all be listening to de Blasio and police commissioner Bill Bratton. If he's telling you to ignore this ISIS video where they're making threats to shoot up Times Square, don't you listen to de Blasio. You show all precautions, all right? You don't need to be going down there to spend money anyway. We don't need to be tourists going there to spend money and inject it into the economy. All right. We need to be saving black dollars or spending black dollars with black people. Going back to the theme that we heard coming out of Justice or Else rally, what we were just talking to Mr. Mays about. All right. So you need to heed the warnings. Maybe it is a hoax. Who knows? Maybe it is incredible intel. Do you want to take that chance? Do you want to take your children to New York City to see the Statue of Liberty or whatever and hang out on Times Square and take selfies? And then next thing you know, people getting gunned down with automatic gunfire or bombs going off or whatnot. Don't listen to these people. They don't care about you. They don't care about your life. That's evident. Look how they're targeting you and already killing you. So they don't care if some terrorist organizations that, you know, ultimately they created and funded and trained. They don't care. If there's a huge loss of life here, that's just the cost of doing business. That's just only going to garner public support to ramp up another war, in which we already are seeing the defense industry stocks going up. So that's very suspect on the part of the mayor of New York and his police commissioner. Very suspect, very irresponsible. But I will say, well, really, it ain't nothing they could say. This was a public threat that was made through social media. So it's not like they could keep it a secret like they kept the warnings from Israelis and Iraqi intelligence services secret and didn't tell nobody. Let all them people that watch football and go to the games, hundreds of thousands of them, you let them go to them stadiums and never warn anyone and said, you know, keep a lookout. If you're going to go out, be ever vigilant. If you see something suspicious, say something. We've gotten these intelligence cables from the Iraqis as well as the Mossad, Israeli intelligence services, and we need to pass that information along to the public because we can only stop these sort of attacks with the help from the public. But no, you wasn't going to tell them nothing. You took the chance that a whole bunch of people could have got shot up while they was tailgating outside of the stadium. You know, you didn't have to go in. The terrorists or potential terrorists don't have to smuggle weapons into the stadium. Hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, hours before these games, set up in the parking lot and pull out their grills and their ice coolers and they're drinking beer and cooking food. And man, there's a whole lot of potential victims right there. And you warn no one. That's just irresponsible. Irresponsible. Now, that last story, I'm not really going to go into it, but I do recommend you read it in terms of gathering intel on counterintelligence. But one point I'll make about it, the author is a white woman. She is using the R word. She's talking about she thinks this woman's motivations might be racism. See, when I call into that terrestrial radio station and I wanted to imply that this is racism on a part of Charlotte Observer and a part of this Tennessee mom, if it's really a Tennessee mom, you know, whoever wrote this letter and Charlotte Observer published it, you know, I use the word implicit bias. If you're a dumb hillbilly and you don't know what implicit bias means, then go look it up. Go look it up. Otherwise, you don't even know I'm calling you a racist to your face and you don't even pick it up. That's how dumb some of these people are, to touch upon some of the things Mr. May said. This is how dumb these people are. So I called in. I said implicit bias. I didn't have any objection. In fact, you know, they were making points to underline my point about what is it about Cam that causes all these people to lose their minds because he's celebrating the touchdown. It's got to be something more than just dancing. But, you know, maybe they have some kind of implicit bias. But see, I didn't say racism or nothing. You know, but this white woman did say racism, and see, she is white, she has white privilege, so she can use the R word, and then, you know, what are they going to call her? You know what I'm saying? They ain't certainly can't call say that she don't know how racism works and how it operates, and she talks about the codification in the white racist speak, so to speak, you know, the racist whisperers out there. What we call them, the redneck whisperers? Yeah, that was, she was able to identify that, and then she just tore that woman's points apart and lifted up Cam as, you know, if you talking about role models for children, there is no one that you should be wanting your child to look up to than Cam Newton with all that he generally does for children. It's a reason he has he's the producer and the host of this Nickelodeon television program that's going to be coming out soon. You know, again, he talks about after he's finished playing, he's going to start a center for youth. And he already runs a foundation to help mentally handicapped children, poor children, and children facing, you know, life-threatening illnesses. He donates, his foundation donates tens of thousands of dollars to buy, you know, equipment for the schools and the under, you know, the what would we call them, the starving for resources, you know, black schools in Charlotte. And he, these kids connect with him because, see, he made a mistake when he was at Florida backing up that scrub Tim Tebow. All right, and he bought a laptop. Turns out the laptop was stolen. When he found out the police or somebody was coming at them, he threw it out the window. He made a mistake, as often many people have done in their lives. He goes through the diversion program for first-time offenders. He humbles himself. He goes to the junior college and works on his degree, plays football, doesn't lose a game, win the junior college championship. Then goes back to the major college, but this time to the Auburn University, where he continues to study for his degree. Again, goes undefeated, wins a national championship, and wins the Heisman along the way. Then picked number one by the Panthers. All right. And so, I mean, this young man is just proven, and he's telling these other students, all that I accomplished, I did not let that one mistake hold me back. I humbled myself. I overcame that. I studied hard. I played hard. And now I'm, quote unquote, successful. And you don't have to let your mistakes hold you back. Because he's talking to a lot of troubled inner city youth. And he instills hope and joy into them. And so, you know, she really was underlying, you know, that this guy is not a thug. He is not someone that should be scolded by a suspected racist. And she did say, I suspect you as being a racist. So, you know, it was good to see proxy racism in reverse. I wish more white people would call out other white people for practicing racism. And you know, not that we shouldn't do it. Of course, I'm going to do it and whatnot. But when I'm talking to a predominantly white audience, I'm going to be codified, meaning I'm going to use the most constructive words that's going to lead me to the least path of resistance. All right. So that's a story I recommend. Please check it out. Yeah, that's all I got. So I will be back on the air tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Stay tuned. Coming up at 6 o'clock. That will be here in just about 21 minutes. Tune back into the live stream, or you can continue to listen. Tando Radio Show is coming on air. He's bringing on JW, somebody going by JW, who is an insider in the banking and financial industry, and they will be coming on to talk about financial issues on Tando Radio Show. That's 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. It's a battlefield out there. Casualties being created every day. Given that fact, you need to develop battlefield awareness. You need to know how to navigate the battlefield. Develop battlefield skills. We are in a war, so you need to develop wartime skills. And then hopefully, it's likely that you won't become a victim, but there's no guarantee. But hey, you gotta take those steps. You can't just be walking around like we don't live in a world that is just being terrorized. Terrorism just going on all over the globe, and I don't want none of y'all to become victims. All right, I will be back on air tomorrow. Peace and blessings to all. Close it out with some H-Rap Brown and some Message music.
We have to begin to move to control our community. Everything that's in your community that you don't control is a weapon against you. Public education as it exists today is a weapon against black people. TV and news media, especially the WPP, White Power Press, White People's Paper, and White People's Power, are enemies against black people. Now, what the white press does is that it makes black people an enemy of black people.